Blog Talk Radio.
You may not be paid for the job.
And some of you will
Everybody, and welcome to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Cal Fritzy. And pardon me there, I just had something in my throat that decided I wanted to stick around for a little bit. Anyway, we are glad to have you all here, and I want to welcome my co-host, and that would be Tim Burton. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Well, good evening to you, Cal. I'm very well, thank you very much. And how are you?
Infidelity fine.
Good.
I
glad
always
to hear it. Yeah. And I'm not even going to go into my usual routine of offering you my most earnest contrafibularities on your special weekend, last weekend, your 25th wedding anniversary, I understand, Cal. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this lady doesn't look old enough to have a 25th wedding anniversary. how did it go? How did it go, Cal?
It went very well. I got spoiled rotten by my husband, flowers and jewelry and a nice dinner Saturday night. What, yeah. A gal could not have asked for a nicer 25th. Absolutely.
Excellent. And did he like the silver-plated and engraved chainsaw that you gave him for the occasion?
Oh, you mean the one encrusted with diamonds? Yeah, he loved it.
Yes, that's the one.
And I have it in a very special place. It's in a place of prominence because...
Oh, right.
Because I want another 25 years, but if he misbehaves, uh-oh, watch out, firing up that bad boy.
Yeah, that's right. You've got to keep him in order. So, yeah, you make sure that's where he can see it every day when he walks in. Good. Well,
You know, starting today, we have a contest going on, Tim.
Oh, yes. Now, tell us about this contest, Cal.
Ladies and gentlemen, for the next few weeks or so, quite a few weeks, actually, we are going to be having a contest. If you call in, we're going to give you a trivia question. And if you call in at 347-237-4318, you will win a beautiful free the Birmingham One coffee mug. If you donate $20, that'd be great to free the Birmingham One, and the links are all up there in the show notes. If you donate maybe a little more, we have some beautiful gift baskets courtesy of the Body Shop, so you might want to win a prize for your lady there. And so, Tim, I don't have a trivia question.
Oh, what you like, Kel. What you like. Here we are, ladies
and gentlemen.
I
got all my ducks in a row, and I had my scratch pad out. And
we have some wonderful prizes for you.
Something just doesn't seem right here.
We have some wonderful prizes for you. The only thing is, we don't actually have any questions. Well, I'm sure we can remedy that over the course of the show. Oh, dearie me. This is a professional show, ladies and gentlemen. Pay no attention to what you're actually hearing coming through your speakers. This is actually a professional show. And Kel and I are going to prove it over the next couple of hours. So, we'll have to get some trivia questions together. I'm sure we'll be able to do that. it's completely thrown me off. I will say, Kel, just before we move into the main topic, you will notice that I have put a slightly different link into the chat room compared to the link that I have been using with regards to the latest updates on my Takiya trial. And the reason for that is that I've had to relocate the donate button because of a technical difficulty on the Liberty GB site. So if anybody is in a position to help out with legal defense donations, because for those of you who've been living under a rock for the last 3 months, the Takiya trial for... that's for myself, Cat Strangler 101, is due to take place on Tuesday the 8th of April. I'm accused of calling the mendacious grievance-mongering Takiya artist, Fiaz Magal of Tell Mama UK, a mendacious grievance-mongering Takiya artist. And as he didn't like it very much, he got his tame police officers from West Midlands Police to come round and have a chat with me. And consequently, I'm in court on Tuesday, the 8th of April. So if anybody out there is in a position to help with donations to the Legal Defence Fund, it would be very much appreciated, because win or lose, the process of taking somebody like myself to court does have a cost to me, and regardless of whether I'm acquitted or convicted, those costs will still be there. For my personal feelings in the matter, I don't really mind which way it goes, whether I am acquitted or convicted, because we have a huge, huge opportunity to highlight some freedom of speech issues and to highlight some issues concerning Islam, which really do need to be brought into the public domain, especially in regards to Takiya. And as one of the components of the charge concerns the fact that I called him a mendacious grievance-mongering Takiya artist. I can't think why I did that, but it's an epithet that seems to have gone round the world in absolutely no time at all. So you know what they say, no smoke without fire. As that was part of the charge, I felt it would be an excellent opportunity to highlight to a wider audience exactly what Takiya is and how Muslims use it to lie to non-Muslims routinely when it comes to promoting the cause of Islam or to protect the cause of Islam to non-Muslims. They do it routinely. They don't even think about it. And that is not something that's widely known. And it has such huge implications for trust between Muslims and non-Muslims that I feel, and most of the people I've talked to regarding this feel, that it would be something that's well worth giving a wider airing. I see somebody in the chat room, one of the 72 virgins, has got a question about Takiya, talking about Bigfoot says Takiya sunrise. Well, it's funny you should see that, Bigfoot, because I have actually composed a little song which I'm calling Takiya Sunrise, which is based on the famous Eagles song of a very similar name. And depending on how the time goes, I might just take my guitar out a little later on and play it for you. That aside, I'll turn the mic back to you, Kel, and just once more to say, if you are in a position to donate to the Freedom Loving Infidel donate button through the Freedom Loving Infidel donate button, I'm just going to pop the link into the chat room for you. But I'll turn the mic back over to you, Kel.
Absolutely, Tim. And ladies and gentlemen, please try to do so if you can, even $20. This is costing Tim a pretty penny, and he needs all the support that we can give him. This is, of course, the premise of the show tonight, and it is the persecution of the freedom of speech. Now, I'm going to come up with a trivia question at the top of the hour, so please stay tuned for that. But right now, yes, Tim, the persecution of freedom of speech. And I got this article from my Gatestone Institute, and I put it in the chat room. I'll repost it in there. This is the OIC blames free speech for Islamophobia in the West, and of course we know that as the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is a rather influential bloc of 56 plus one Muslim countries. And they released the latest edition of the annual Islamophobia report. Now, keep in mind, folks, this is from 3 months ago, so it's from December 11th of 2013, but believe me, it is timely. It's their annual report, so this is the latest one. At the 6th OIC Observatory Report on Islamophobia, October 2012 to September of 2013, there is a 94-page document purporting to offer a comprehensive picture of Islamophobia as it exists mainly in contemporary Western societies. But the primary objective of the OIC, headquartered in Saudi Arabia and funded by dozens of Muslim countries that systematically persecute Christians and Jews, have long been to pressure Western countries into passing laws that would ban negative stereotyping of Islam. Now, in this context, Tim, the OIC's annual Islamophobia report is an integral part of a sustained effort to prove the existence of a culture of intolerance of Islam and Muslims in the West. It is, in essence, a lobbying tool to pressure Western governments to outlaw all forms of quote-unquote Islamophobia, a nebulous concept invented by the Muslim Brotherhood in the 1990s, which I thought it was, I thought that was coined decades before, but apparently it was coined in the 1990s. So they're really going through a lot here to ensure that we shut up. And that includes you, Tim. And one thing that Tim and I, myself, we were discussing, we were also discussing the issue of Ezra Levant, who once again is being taken to court because his freedom of speech is being compromised in Canada. We had Mark Stein and Maclean's magazine being taken to the human rights tribunals because they dared to speak truthfully about Islam. So this is what happens, folks, is that when you do speak the truth, and believe me, I would not be too concerned if I was called a grievance mongering mendacious taqiyya artist. That is the least of my concerns. My concerns would be, of course, the persecution of free speech itself. Now, you get people like Fayez Miguel engaging in taking people like Tim to a tribunal, which I'm calling it because that's exactly how I see it, we have a bit of a problem here in the West. Now, what to do about it? Well, the OIC. They hold a lot of power. They hold a lot of sway. And this sort of reportage actually does keep me up at night, Tim, because this means that I cannot conduct my little radio show here on Block Talk Radio and speak truth with facts and links and having the Quran right in front of me, quoting directly from the Quran. I can be shut down because I am merely speaking the truth, Tim.
Well, yes, I mean, that is a huge, huge problem because freedom of speech is really the only defense we have against the encroachment of Islamization in the West. We look around when we go out in the morning and go out the front door, we look around up and down the road, and nothing much seems to have changed for a lot of people, and so they don't give it a lot of thought day by day, but it's a huge, huge issue because if you were to suddenly find that your freedom of speech disappeared, the whole nature of our free civilization and the way that our democracies work and the freedoms that we have, they would change overnight. And people many people don't realize how important freedom of speech actually is. I mean, they'll realize how important it is if they should lose it, but of course we have to fight against it because if we do lose freedom of speech at this time, then the advancing encroachment of Islam will be able to continue unimpeded, and that would be a disaster for humanity as a whole, because it's only the fact that we do have the concept of Judeo-Christian civilization as a bulwark against Islam that has actually prevented the Islam from spreading much further and much quicker than it has done in the past. So it's a very, very important issue. And as you say, the OIC do carry a lot of power, partly, of course, due to the fact that they're very well funded through Saudi petrodollars and so on. And we are demonized and smeared at every opportunity. And this little contretemps I have with Fayez Miguel of Tell Mama is really only a microcosm of the situation that we see at the OIC, the Organization of Islamic Cooperation, which is trying very hard through UN Resolution 1618 to shut down all criticism of Islam altogether. And of course, we should never forget that the reason we are critical of Islam at all is the fact, or one of the primary reasons, is that we have been sold a false narrative. We've been sold a lie, a pup, a bill of goods. We have been presented, I mean, it's not just us, it's not just our generation. Generations of Muslims have sold this false narrative to generations of Muslims for 1400 years. But right now, this current generation of Muslims is selling the concept, the false narrative of Islam being a benign and tolerant religion of peace to most of our influential political elites in the West, and they are swallowing it uncritically, hook, line, and sinker. Now, this wouldn't matter if Islam were, in fact, a benign and tolerant religion of peace, but it is not. It's a ruthless and malevolent totalitarian political ideology that hides its intentions behind a cloak of religion in order to promote an agenda of world domination. And if it were to ever succeed in that goal, humanity would be the poorer for it. And that's, well, infinitely poorer, immeasurably poorer. And that's why we have to fight it with every opportunity and every weapon we have at our disposal. Now, our weapons may not be very much in material terms compared to the money that Islamic countries are putting behind the effort to shut down freedom of speech, but we do have one huge advantage on our side, and that is we speak the truth. There is absolutely no question about that, that if you looked at Islam dispassionately, using reason and logic and critical analysis and critical thought, it would be impossible to come to any other conclusion about Islam other than what I have just been explaining to you as to what its nature is. But most people don't want to take the time and trouble to analyze Islam to that extent, and certainly our political elites don't. And what we have is a view that is being pushed forward that Islam is somehow benign and tolerant and a religion of peace and all that, and it's fully compatible with Western civilization, fully compatible with our democratic principles, and poses no threat to the ongoing freedoms that we've enjoyed over the past couple of hundred years. And that's completely false, because If Islam were to have the opportunity to shut down our freedoms and to persecute us as non-Muslims, it would do so in a heartbeat. If it were able to implement, if the opportunity came about for Islam to implement laws in the West, Sharia compliant laws I'm talking about, make it a crime to speak ill of Islam and to persecute Jews and Christians if they step out of line and refuse to accept their positions as third-class citizens under a regime of dimitude and pay the jizya and so on and so on. We would be completely crushed if that were to happen, and humanity would cease. It's the possibility for humanity to develop and advance in the way that it has been able to over the past couple of hundred years would simply disappear. So that's how important it is. And my little contretemps, as I say, with Fiaz Maghal, is really just a microcosm of what's happening at the OIC. With the attempt to shut down freedom of speech, criticism of Islam, criticism of the Quran, of Muhammad, of his life, of the Hadith, of the Seerah, or the Quran itself, all this we would just have no opportunity to criticize it in any way, shape, or form. And yes, people, we have to resist it with everything at our disposal.
I find this IOC report, somebody went through a lot of trouble to write this up and have it passed as a verbatim law, as it were. It consists of five chapters, and there are several annexes aimed at documenting incidents of slandering and demeaning Muslims and their sacred symbols, including attacks on mosques, verbal abuses, and physical attacks against adherents of Islam, mainly due to their cultural traits. Now, later on, Tim and myself, we're going to get into what exactly is happening with the Christians and the Jews, but right now I'm rather interested in this article, Tim, because I was reading it, and I've read similar articles, but this one I had never read, and I was literally, my eyes were getting wider and wider and wider. But the common thread here that binds the entire document together, pardon me, is the OIC's repeated insistence that the main culprit responsible for the institutionalization of Islamophobia in Western countries is freedom of speech, which the OIC claims has contributed enormously to snowball Islamophobia and manipulate the mindset of ordinary Western people to develop a phobia of Islam and Muslims. And this is here we are again. This is according to the OIC, that freedom of expression is shielding the perpetrators of Islamophobia who seek to propagate irrational fear and intolerance of Islam, who have time and again aroused unwarranted tension, suspicion, and unrest in societies by slandering the Islamic faith through gross distortions and misinterpretations and by encroaching on and denigrating the religious sentiment of Muslims. Now, I apologize, ladies and gentlemen, I implore you, but I have a bit of a problem with people who want to blow me up. And I am the one of the panelists at Rooster's show, The Rooster Crows at Night. And he does not discuss issues of Islam. He discusses issues of American politics, and that show is fascinating. I'm doing a plug here because I am the guest host, or the co-host, rather, and that I just make sure the studio is good and people are behaving themselves in the chat room. But it is one of the best shows that I do here on Blog Talk Radio, and that is The Rooster Crows at Night. So that's what Rooster says. He's not interested in the issues of Muslims, nor are we. We're only interested in the people who want to blow us up or shut us down.
Yes, indeed. And there is a definite distinction to be made there, because a lot of people who say, well, we shouldn't be critical of Islam because it's a religion. Okay, taking aside the argument that it's not actually a religion but primarily a political ideology, the important thing to remember is that as far as the personal and private practice of Islam is concerned, that is to say, if somebody wants to pray to a deity five times a day and they do it in a personal and private way, that is no concern of ours, and neither should it be. I've often said that when it comes to faith, I don't have a problem with faith at all. I think everybody is entitled to a belief system that allows them to make sense of the world, that gives them some comfort and strength in times of trial and tribulation, and that provides them with a framework for spiritual growth or spiritual enlightenment, if you like, a search for truth and beauty and goodness. Everybody is entitled to that. What they're not entitled to do is to add on or bolt on a political system which effectively tells anybody who doesn't believe in the same thing that they have to be treated as second-class or third-class citizens. That is just simply not acceptable. And Muslims get away with it because they have, as I said, successfully, up to now anyway, successfully sold the notion that Islam is a faith just like Judaism and Christianity and should be treated as such and should have all the dispensations that Judaism and Christianity and other religions enjoy and should have protections from unwarranted harassment. Well, that's fine if it were actually a religion and fell into the same category, but when you're talking about a political ideology, Islam is far, far closer to the concept of fascism and Nazism, for example, than it is to the concepts of Judaism and Christianity, which really are, or fall much closer to the concept of a peaceful religion, if only because they follow the golden rule, which is do unto others as you would have done to you, and Islam does not follow that rule. And that's the single reason why I would say if we were to classify Islam as it should be classified, which is to say as a political ideology, a totalitarian political ideology on a par with fascism and Nazism, we could deal with it far more easily. But first of all, we have to make our political elites wake up and see that they have in fact been sold a pup, a false narrative, a bill of goods. We have to do that.
And we are being, pardon this frog in my throat, pardon me, Tim, I'm sorry about that. And we should be concerned about these sort of reports, in that they are absolutely determined that Western governments are going to adopt these policies. The United States, Barack Hussein Obama's administration, is more than keen to adopt these policies from the OIC. I mean, I'm looking at a picture here in the article, and there's Hillary Clinton sitting there around the table with a big grin on her face, and she's eating this crap up. And I'm sorry, that's what it is. This is crap. We don't have ourselves dictated to by foreigners in our Western democracies and our republics on how we are going to engage in dialogue when it comes to certain issues. Islam is a contentious issue. Of course it is, because these people want to kill us. And so when we want to speak out about it, they're throwing this article in our faces, and they're insisting that Western governments adopt this. What are they going to do next? Take my truncheon away from me? For God's sake. This just makes me furious, Tim. Now, this is according to the OIC. Freedom of speech is to blame for the perpetration of Islamophobia, which has become increasingly widespread, which in turn has caused an increase in the actual number of hate crimes committed against Muslims. These crimes range from the usual verbal abuse and discrimination, particularly in the field of education and employment, to other acts of violence and vandalism, including physical assaults, attacks on Islamic centers, and the desecration of mosques and cemeteries. So in this context, acceptance of various forms of intolerance, including hate speech, hello Tim, and the propagation of negative stereotypes against Islam and Muslims in some Western countries contribute towards proliferation of intolerant societies. This process is further supported by the exploitation of freedom of expression and perpetration of an ideological context advocating an inescapable conflict of civilizations. Now, this one just throws me. This process is further supported by the exploitation of freedom of expression.
Well, yes. I mean, well, quite. I mean, the it's as if they're accusing us of making it all up, as if Islamophobia, this mythical concept that they've constructed, has come out of nowhere, and that people like you and I have just woken up one day and decided to say bad things about Islam for no reason at all. And they're talking about here an inescapable, talking about perpetuation of an ideological context advocating an inescapable conflict of civilizations. Well, now, why would we think that? Unless, of course, we had been looking back in history, let's say, for example, we'd gone onto Google and we'd trotting of jihad or tears of jihad, for example, two things you might like to Google, ladies and gentlemen, when you get 5 minutes, maybe at the end of the show. If you look at the 1,400 years of Islamic history and see how Islam has expanded in those 1,400 years, it's possible to detect patterns. And the patterns that we detect through history are often a good guide to what might happen in the future. And when you see something like the political ideology of Islam spreading around the world, what it is not doing is spreading through a simple process of goodwill. It's not as if a bunch of Muslims have wandered into the country next door and said, hey, you know, we've got this religion and it's really good, why don't you study it? And then if you think it's good enough, perhaps you'll join us. Because the so-called Prophet Muhammad actually did try that approach when he was right at the start of his career back in Mecca. He spent 13 years, I believe, wandering around the country basically saying just that, I've got this really wonderful religion and I think it would be a great idea if you guys came along and joined with me. And after about 13 years, I think he had about 150 people, and he obviously thought, sod this for a game of soldiers, as we like to say over this side of the pond. Stuff this for a lark, indicating he might in fact be wasting his time doing what he was doing. And when he changed tack and he was forced to flee from Mecca to Medina in, I think, the year 622, he then had the opportunity to change the way he did things and change them. He did. He changed from just being a simple preacher of what he developed in his mind, as so the story goes. Anyway, I'm only going by Islamic texts here. He changed his way of doing things from being a simple preacher to being a warrior and attacking caravans with a band of men who had followed him, and thus becoming very rich in the process. Now everybody likes a winner, and what he found was that when he changed his rhetoric and said that and made it a very much more of a martial political system compared to a purely religious rhetoric spouting system that he'd tried for 13 years previously, all of a sudden he became very, very successful. And consequently, Islam has spread, as I said, not through the peaceful persuasion of people, through them looking at the concepts of the religion and saying to themselves, hey, this new religion has got a lot of inherent goodness in it, let's join it. Rather, it was spread by the sword, in as much as if you do not convert to Islam, we will either cut your head off or we will subject you to such heinous financial penalties and other social penalties that you will wish that you'd never been born. And of course, under those circumstances, it wasn't surprising that many people just said, well, we're just not strong enough to stand up against this. Maybe we'd just better convert to Islam. We'll become Muslims. All right, we'll have to change the way we do things a bit, but at least we'll get to keep our heads on our shoulders. So that's how Islam has spread. It isn't through any inherent good in the religion, because there is none. It has spread through the sword, and anybody who tells you different is lying. They're basically using taqiyya. Where have I heard that word before? I can't think. Never mind. Let's move on. Yes, yeah. They're basically lying to you, and Islam has spread by the sword ever since. And if you look at the history, as I say, if you look at the history of jihad, if you look at the tears of jihad, or Google the tears of jihad, you will see that pattern has been repeated time and again throughout history. And that is why we are now faced with this political ideology threatening to overtake our societies, because we have seen, those of us who have taken the trouble to look into what has happened in the past, we see these patterns, and we see what Islam is doing today in every Western country, in every democracy based on Judeo-Christian values. Muslims are intent on overthrowing those systems, and if they get to a point where through strength of numbers they're in a position to make that change, then they will, and it will not be a peaceful transition.
What will happen is the demographics grow, they will establish voting blocks, and we will see more politicians who follow the Islamic faith holding positions of power in office. And this is what we call the civilizational and political jihad.
Well, yes. And jihad, of course, is something that can be carried out on many different levels. It's not necessarily jihad on the battlefield. It's jihad through the death of a thousand cuts, if you like, in every way that a Muslim can promote or advance Islam while they're in a Western country, they will do that. And even if it's just trying to get accommodation for Islamic practices or at every little level, whether it's single-sex swimming sessions at the local baths, or whether it's halal food in the supermarkets, or halal food in school cafeterias, or the segregating of students at schools or in other public places, they will push and push and push. And if we do not say no, they'll just keep pushing. So that's all part of the civilizational jihad. And the Muslims that come and say to us, again, that jihad is purely an interior spiritual struggle, and we kuffar should not worry about it because it has no detrimental effect on our society. Well, that's taqiyya again, ladies and gentlemen. I keep using that word. I can't think why, but it's a word that keeps popping into my mind. I do excuse me, ladies and gentlemen, if it sort of just pops into the conversation every now and again.
Ladies and gentlemen, look into the show notes and the pictures, and you'll understand why that word is not far from Tim's mind. But
well, just
dissecting this article, though, we pretty much covered chapter one, and I briefly want to touch on chapter two because this is what's affecting people like Ezra Levant, Mark Stein, Tim Burton, and people like this, that when they do speak out about Islam and they do speak the truth or they expose the lies of Islam is what Tim actually did. Tim not only spoke the truth, but he exposed the lies of Fayez McGull, and for this, Tim is being taken to court. But chapter two here, Tim, of the report, it deals with the manifestations of Islamophobia in the West. The number of Islamophobic incidents continues to rise in the U.S. as a result of anti-Muslim propaganda. It is particularly alarming that anti-Muslim sentiments are taking deeper roots, infiltrating further into the educational system. Oh, please. Notable among several other worrying trends and cases are initiatives taken by a leading and powerful U.S. legislator, U.S. Representative Peter King, and he is the one that blew the lid off the Holy Land. He dissected the Holy Land Foundation and in a hearing. And people like Peter King to convene special congressional hearings on radicalization of Islam in the U.S. In the same vein, the Republican Party of the recent 213 U.S. presidential elections also used the anti-Islam card as a strategy. Now, I'm just getting into the meat and potatoes of this one here. There's a lot here in Chapter 2, but this one is really important. Now, with regards to Islamophobic trends in Europe, various reports and polls have revealed growing misperceptions vis-a-vis Islam and Muslims. Among the most common and reoccurring are the ideas that Muslims are inclined to violence, including revenge and retaliation, that Islam is an inherently expansionist religion, which strives for political influence, and whose followers are obsessed with proselytizing others, and more generally, that Islam deprives women of their rights and encourages religious fanaticism and radicalization. Now, according to the same polls, only a minor portion of the public tend to see Islam in a more positive light as being a religion of peace that preaches love for neighbors, charity, openness, and tolerance. Muslims who live in xenophobic environments are more exposed to daily stress and other forms of moral prejudice. Now, Tim, this one in here really got my eyes open again, in that they are trying to sell us a bill of goods in that that Islam does not have strivations for a caliphate. Lie, right there. It says right in the Quran, that is the ambitions and that is the aim of Islam, is to engage in a global caliphate. They are trying to convince us that Muslims do not create acts of violence. Okay, maybe 90% don't, but 10% or so do. And the 10% that do are not being taken to task by the 90%. That is my problem, is that, fine, if you're a Muslim, you know, go for it. Practice your religion, if you want to call it that, fine. But you have to take responsibility for the whole ball of wax. You cannot look at me straight in the face and tell me that Islam is a religion of peace, because once again, that is a lie. It's not a lie. It will only be peaceful when the caliphate is achieved. And even then, there will never be peace, because the Sunni and the Shia would be going at it forever. But don't stand there and tell me that it is a religion of peace in the sense that you want to dupe me into believing, because I know for a fact that it is not. I have read your Quran. I know what's in it. I understand it. And something else. Do not even try to convince me that Islam is not an expansionist religion. It is. We just covered that. You are striving for political influence, and you are allowing the followers who are obsessed with proselytizing others. And we know that. And do not come to us and whine and whinge and whine and complain about your mosques being vandalized, because half the time it is the imam who is vandalizing his own mosque to garner sympathy within the public eye. Now, the OIC, they concluded with this chapter that journalists and media organizations have a responsibility to avoid promoting rhetoric of hate by acting as a platform for its widespread decimation. Well, you know, Tim, I'm going to ask you a question. When they talk about the media, I don't think the media is nearly hard enough on the hardcore Islamists within Islam.
Well, no, you're absolutely right. Of course, on social media, when you're talking about Twitter and Facebook and Blog Talk Radio and so on, we have a lot more freedom, especially in the counter-jihad movement, to say what we mean and to speak the truth. If they're talking about mainstream media organizations, well, you're absolutely right, Kel, that the mainstream media is falling over itself at the moment not to present Islam as anything other than a religion of peace. There are 1,000 examples that I'm sure we could give to our listeners, and the main one, of course, that jumps to my mind every time I think about this subject is what the media did just after the murder of Fusilier Lee Rigby on the streets of Woolwich in London back in May 2013. They were falling over themselves to say this is nothing to do with Islam. This is purely, if it was anything to do with Islam at all, it's only a tiny minority of people who bring a bad name to the religion and so on. And this extended to our politicians such as David Cameron as well, our Prime Minister, who stood up in the House of Commons and said exactly that only a few days after that murder on the streets of Woolwich. So, yes, to complain about the media being hard on Islam, well, you know, that just isn't happening. The media is not really doing its job at all when it comes to searching out the truth about Islam, and it's only because we're at a fortunate point in our technological development where we've got the internet, we've got the counter-jihad movements that can take advantage of the advances in social media, including, as I say, Blog Talk Radio, that we're able to get our message out at all. If we were only dependent on the mainstream media for our information, then we wouldn't know there was a problem with Islam at all. Or at least very few of us would know. There'd still be the tiny minority of us who would do our homework and would come to the correct conclusions, but we certainly wouldn't have the voice that we do today, and that's something to be thankful for, that we've got something that our forefathers never had when they had to fight Islam. They never had the advantage of the internet and social media in order to bring the light of truth to the rest of the world. So I, for that reason alone, I'm very hopeful that we're going to be able to turn around this phenomenon before it swamps us through the demographic changes that are likely to take place in the next couple of generations. But just to go back briefly to a couple of points you made earlier, you were saying about Islam not being a religion of peace, and why do Muslims say that it is? Well, two reasons. One is, oh, dare I use the word taqiyya again? No, I don't suppose I'd better. I will get into trouble if I use that word too often. They lie to promote Islam and to prevent its denigration in the eyes of non-Muslims, and they do it routinely. And they can look you in the eye and they can tell you these lies without even blinking, because what taqiyya means is that you have divinely sanctioned permission to lie to the kuffar in order to promote Islam or to prevent its denigration. So you can look the kuffar in the eye, you can lie to him, you can lie to a Muslim head right off, and Allah will smile on you. And the concept of lying is completely different compared to the Judeo-Christian concept of lying, where lying is considered a sin. people do lie, of course, all the time, but it's still considered a sin. And that's why when you go into a court of law, you swear on the Bible that you're going to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, in order to bring it home to you how serious it is to tell a lie. Well, a Muslim doesn't have that concept. He can go into a kuffar court of law, swear on the Quran that he will tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, and then continue to lie his little Muslim head off without a second thought, because there is no sanction that Allah will apply to him if his lie is to promote Islam or to prevent the denigration of Islam. And that's something that very few people realize. So anyway, there's that aspect. And the other thing I was going to say was that you have to really watch the meaning of words when you're talking with a Muslim, because the concept of peace means something completely different to Muslims compared to us. We think of it as being a state of harmony. A state of harmony, as I said, that exists with perhaps compromise and negotiation with people who don't 100% agree with us, so that we can all live together and be relatively tolerant of each other. But that is not what Muslims mean by peace. They mean the peace that will come when everybody who disagrees with Islam has been slaughtered and only Muslims exist in the world, then there will be peace. And that's why a Muslim can say Islam is a religion of peace. So concepts like that, you do have to realize that they mean completely different things to Muslims. And there was one other thing as well. You were talking about the media have a responsibility to avoid promoting rhetoric of hate. Well, again, we would not be saying anything at all against Islam if it were purely a personal and private belief system. It's only that they want to completely take over and destroy our way of life. And they will do it as well if they can, through demographic means. If they can increase their numbers over the space of a couple of generations and take over Western countries, they will do so without question. That will, if we allow it to happen, they will definitely do it. But even if we didn't allow it to happen through demographic procedures, they would try every means at their disposal to take over our countries through force, through fear, violence, terror, and intimidation, because that's the way Islam works best, through fear, violence, terror, and intimidation, not through promoting of Islam as somehow a good belief system that you should voluntarily embrace because it has inherent goodness. It's not like that. You could say those things about Christianity, for example, and many other religions. You could say, if you look at the philosophy that is espoused by those religions, you can see inherent good. And so people do convert to Christianity, they convert to Buddhism, to Hinduism, to Sikhism, well, to pretty much any religion you can name. People do convert because they see goodness inherent in the philosophy that that religion espouses. But you can't say the same thing about Islam. When they're talking about when they're talking about Islam being a religion of peace that preaches love for neighbors, charity, openness, and tolerance, what they mean is that Islam does in fact have verses in the Quran that do preach those things, but they are only for other Muslims. That's Muslims talking about other Muslim neighbors, talking about Muslim charities, talking about openness between Muslims, talking about tolerance from one Muslim to another. When it comes to relations between Muslims and non-Muslims, there is no sense at all of neighborliness, charity, openness, and tolerance at all. Muslims must be ruthless to non-believers. That is in the Quran. And that is why I say Islam does not follow the golden rule. That is an example. I think it might be chapter 60, verse 4, off the top of my head. I might have to check that out, ladies and gentlemen, so don't take my word for that. But it says in the Quran that Muslims must be ruthless towards non-believers. They can be brotherly towards one another, but towards non-believers, they must be utterly ruthless. And that's what I mean when I say Islam does not follow the golden rule. It should not be treated as a religion. It should be treated first and foremost as a political ideology. And if we were to do that, all the cognitive dissonance that we experience up to now would fall away, because everybody would look at it and say, oh yeah, it really is a political ideology, just like Nazism or fascism. And if we treat it like that, then we can control and constrain it so it is no longer a threat to the West. Now, we're a little way off that, ladies and gentlemen, but nevertheless, the very fact that we're speaking here about this subject tonight and you're listening to us tonight means that we still have hope. And all we really need to do is to wake up everybody else who is not a Muslim but has not yet realized the truth of the evil that Islam actually is.
Absolutely. And with that, Tim, we are at the top of the hour. What we're going to do is we're going to come back. We're going to dissect this article a little more. But I have a trivia question for people in the chat room.
Ooh.
If you can guess what this word means, and the word is penultimate. The word is penultimate. You can call in at 347-237-4318. Give us the definition of penultimate and try to use it in a sentence and win yourself a beautiful Tell Mama coffee mug and support Tim and go to his link and, you know, throw $20 Tim's way, okay? That'll buy him and his lawyer a coffee and maybe a muffin or something.
Yeah.
But every little bit helps.
Well, it does. Thank you very much, Kel. And I've just put that link into the chat room once again. That's just a brief summary on my weblog of what's going on, plus the donate button towards the top of the page. And yes, if you can help out with a donation, however small, it would be very much appreciated. Now, let me think, Kel. Penultimate, is that kind of like a superior goose quill? Is that what a penultimate is?
The ultimate goose quill pen.
Oh, maybe not.
Not quite. Close though, but not quite.
Oh, all right then. So I don't get a mug. I don't get a mug. Oh dear. Okay.
No, I'm sorry, Tim. You're disqualified.
Oh,
all ladies right, and gentlemen, the word is penultimate. What does it mean? What is the definition? And can you use that in a sentence? We're going to give people a chance to think about that one, Tim, and we're going to take a quick break right now, guys, and we'll see everybody back here in a little under 4 minutes.
There's a fire starting in my heart, reaching a fever pitch, it's bringing me out the dark.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to the Red Fox Blogger with your host, Tim Burton and Cal Fritzy. And Tim, we have somebody on the line who would like to answer our trivia question, and I'm going to bring this gentleman on right now.
Okay.
Hello,
Hello Bigfoot.
Hello, Cal and Tim.
Hello, Bigfoot. How are you tonight?
Good, good. Anyway, penultimate, it means second to last.
Ah.
We have a winner! Congratulations, Bigfoot! You have won the prize.
You even got the music for that, okay.
And there you go. And what I'm going to do, Tim, is I'm going to let you carry forth with the show. We actually do have a caller here for 10. Bigfoot, stay on the line because I'm going to get your details. And I did not vet this call, but this is 4707. Welcome to the program. What's your name and what's your comment?
This is Old Hep here, and I was calling in with the definition of penultimate. Yep.
Oh, we're sorry. You know what? We're going to be having this contest for quite a few weeks, so if you want to try again next week.
Well, I'll tell you, that last caller, he got it wrong. Penultimate is what I put in my pickup truck when I want to outrun them regularly. I've been putting penultimate in my truck for a long time. So.
I don't know about you, Cal, but I reckon that deserves a consolation prize at the very least.
A date with Tim. I'm going to go into the green room. I'll see you in a sec.
Okay. So where are we? Where are we now? Bigfoot, we got penultimate as being the second to last. Have you got a sentence for us which has penultimate in it, so that we can educate our listeners on exactly how this word should be used? Oops, what's happened here? All right. We don't seem to have Bigfoot on the line any longer. 4707, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here. This is all
help.
Okay. Need some help.
Well, I was just going to ask Bigfoot another question, but he's not actually there. I appreciate you phoning in, though, and I was just wondering if you'd got any comments on the show up to now, in addition to that very good definition of penultimate that you gave us. I really quite like that, penultimate in your truck. I really like that. But
I've been putting in penultimate in my truck for a long time.
Well,
but,
great.
Was that Amy Winehouse music I heard playing?
Well, it might well have been. Kel is the musical specialist on this show, and when she picks a tune like that, or whatever tune she does pick, she doesn't normally inform me in advance as to what it is, which is absolutely fine with me, because I'm very happy with Kel's music appreciation. If it was me, you would probably have about 10 minutes of medieval Morris dancing music, and that would probably drive all the listeners away. But Kel's very good when she picks the musical clips. They're generally something that fits in quite well with the show. It might have been Amy Winehouse. I have to confess, if I say yes, it was, and she comes back and says no, it isn't, I'm going to look really, really silly. But yeah, it might have been Amy Winehouse.
Yeah, it was Amy Winehouse. She's been drinking a lot of my bootleg liquor for a long time. I think maybe it killed her.
Oh, dear. Well, that's...
I'll make a little joke there.
Oh, I wouldn't spread that. She was very, very popular over here, you know. I mean, I can't say I was a huge fan. I quite liked her music, but I wasn't really the huge fan of Amy Winehouse in the way that a lot of people were. But, you know, nevertheless, she was a popular figure over here, and a lot of people were very sorry when she met her untimely death. But, yeah, so it was your bootleg liquor we've got to blame for that, was it? Oh,
right, and you know, I like a little bit of bluegrass. A little bit of bluegrass keeps them Sharia dudes at bay.
Well, yeah, quite. I mean, I'm fond of a little bit of bluegrass myself. In fact, I tell you what, while we're waiting for Kel to come back, I'm just going to just pick my guitar up and just see if I can put a couple of notes down the line. Now, I'm going to have to apologise in advance because I do know from experience that guitar frequencies do not carry very well over to Blog Talk Radio compared to speech frequencies. So when I play, although you might hear a little bit of guitar music, it's probably not going to sound particularly musical. So I'm going
to just... Well, let me grab my banjo. Maybe I'll accompany you.
Oh, that would be great. Does that sound familiar?
I think the middlemen are turning up their guitars.
That's pretty good, uh-huh.
We need more volume.
You need more volume. Yeah,
yeah.
Okay. Sorry about that. Whoa. Short notice, but there you
go. That sounds pretty good there, brother. You have to come down here, play it by the river.
Well, I would love to do that. I really would. I'm just going to, just before Kel comes back on, because I don't want to overwhelm you all with my awesomeness when it comes to playing the guitar. But I will just quickly do a verse of. It was an Eagles song until I got hold of it, and it's called Takiya Sunrise. Now, I'm not going to play all the music because it's going to completely drown my voice out, but here we go. It's another Takiya sunrise, just another day selling porky pies, just telling lies. He was known as Chicken Moogal. Telling lies was like him for okay. I tell Mama UK. Every night when the sun went down, he'd add up all the hate crimes in town. But there was never enough to go round. So he made it all up. Just another Takiya sunrise, just another day telling porky pies, just telling lies. There you go. I haven't finished it, but that's as far as I've got. I know it's not as good as the Eagles, and it's probably not going to sell as many copies of as the Eagles have sold of the original Takiya Sunrise, but nevertheless... I intend to put it onto MP3 and tidy it up a bit, and then I'll get it out to you guys listening in. If anybody requests a copy, it'll be totally free. You won't have to pay for that. If anybody wants a copy on MP3, you'd be more than welcome to it. Anyway, back to you, Kel, because Eric Kyle says I should get on X Factor. I think that's a bit tongue-in-cheek.
Well, thanks for that song. I got to go, but
yeah.
You play them Beatles fellas, you play them?
Yeah, Well, yeah, I mean, I really appreciate you calling in and giving me an opportunity to pick up my guitar and play, so that's really much appreciated. And
right.
Please,
we got a group here called the Vittles. They're not the Beatles, they're the Vittles down here. Goodbye now. This old Hep.
Goodbye now.
Hep.
Good
it's
to hear you.
Hep.
Good to hear you.
Hep, love you. Thank you. Oh, my gosh, that was just absolutely beautiful. Gotta love it when we get these callers, eh, there, Tim? I am telling
well, indeed,
you. But
indeed.
Oh, we've got so many. Yeah, we've got so many great callers that we get here, and we've got great people in our chat room: Bigfoot, Kath, Dodgy Dave, Eric, some guests, Jadam, and Vito Esposito, Mama Mia, No Sharia, and yes, infidels are watching me. We have Sweet Sue from New Mexico listening on the line, and so we're having not a bad show because a lot of our listeners, of course, we turned our clocks forward 3 weeks earlier than you do in the UK, Tim. And so people in the UK, they're getting the show an hour earlier at 7 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time until you folks change your clocks back to British summertime on March 30th. So just some programming notes there for you. And to remind you that if you listen to programs out of the UK, you will, for example, let me see. Gee, what show, Tim, do we listen to out of the UK? What show could that one possibly be? Would
I
that
can't
be
think, Tim.
Is it the one
with Jeff the Arachnophobe on it? Is that
the Arachnophobe guy. Yeah, what's his name? Jeff Mitchell? Yeah, that's the one. If you folks are in North America, Jeff Mitchell, he will be an hour later. And that the clocks will not go forward in the UK until March 30th. So there you go, some programming notes to keep in mind. Oh, and another programming note. I am the moderator on Liberty GB Weekly Roundup, and that's usually heard here 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which is now 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time until March 30th, until the UK catches up and changes their clocks forward as well. So there you go, Tim. But
yeah, I know it's all very confusing, all these time changes. I mean, can you believe it? You know, there are some radio hosts that are going to totally forget about the time changes, and they're going to be looking to get onto their shows that they've got on in Canada, and they're going to be an hour late. It's a good job that didn't happen here tonight, isn't it, Kel? It really is. I mean,
really,
that would have just been terrible. I tell you what, Kel dropped, ladies and gentlemen, Kel dropped this note into my Skype box about 1 minute to 7 o'clock in UK time tonight, and she said, "You haven't signed in." And I was looking at this, and I was thinking, what does she want me to sign in for? There's another hour to go. And then I realised, and I thought, oh, but it was a mad dash to get signed in to the Blog Talk Radio studio and to get the show started, because That's one of the things I have. In fact, that's the only thing I have to do. And I could just imagine Kel saying, "You had one thing to do, and you managed to make a total pig's ear of it." But fortunately, we got started, and we were only about a minute and a half late. So I do apologise for the delay in starting,
fine,
ladies and gentlemen.
So what did Eric Kyle in the chat room? He said, "What you like?"
Yeah, what am I like? Yeah, very, fair enough.
Oh, but we got here and everything is rock and rolling, and I am so very proud that we gave out one of our very first prizes, and that is the Tell Mama the Mendacious Grievance Mongering Takia Artist Fayez, what's his name? Mughal? Fayez Mughal. I don't even know the name of the guy that we're funning here. But he's been lying about Islamophobia since 2012. Win your coffee mug. And if you want to donate a little more to Tim's Defense Fund, we have some very nice prizes courtesy of the Body Shop. So you might want to do that. Now, if you, like I say, just scroll up, take a look at the pictures in the slides, and you'll see the prizes that we're giving away for a number of weeks down the road. So tune in every Monday, a prize every Monday for quite a few weeks down the road. I am very pleased to announce our very first winner, of course, was Bigfoot. So congratulations, Bigfoot, on winning that wonderful coffee mug. Now, Tim, where were we?
Well, we were
We were talking about this, but the OIC, yeah, we got through chapters one and chapters two. There are so many. This consists of five chapters, and we're pretty much through them. Chapter three of the OIC report highlights some positive developments in terms of initiatives and other steps and positions taken to combat Islamophobia, including the condemnation of anti-Muslim hate speech by various quarters, including non-Muslim religious leaders, the barring from entry of certain Islamophobes to a number of countries where they intend to take part in anti-Muslim rallies or deliver inflammatory lectures. Hello, Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer. You're not going to UK anytime soon. The recognition of Muslim holidays. Oh, here we go. They want the recognition of Islamic holidays in Judeo-Christian states. Okay, that's not okay, but boy, oh boy. They want other strict sanctions taken against acts of manifest religious intolerance. It was noted with satisfaction that a number of international organizations, including UNSCO, the OSCE, and the Council of Europe, have recognized the danger posed by Islamophobia and have taken concrete steps to combat it, notably by laying down guidelines for educators on countering intolerance and discrimination against Muslims. And I like that, Tim. All in caps.
Yes,
guidelines.
Indeed. I mean, that's one of the
guidelines.
Guidelines, yeah. But, I mean, that's one of the big things about what we have to be on guard against in education in particular, because they realize that if they can control the minds of our young children in this generation, then in the next generation it's going to be that much easier for them to take the next step to shutting down freedom of speech altogether. So, yes, absolutely. Guidelines for, that they're putting in place now, we see popping up all the time in schools and colleges and other educational centres, examples of teachers and educational people who will be the influence in educational bodies who are going out of their way to promote Islam in one form or another. And the reason they're doing it, of course, is because they think that Islam is somehow a good thing. Why do they think that? Because they have been told so by Muslims. They have not done independent research themselves, like we have, you and I, Kel, and our listeners. They've not done independent research like that. They've relied on what Muslims have told them, and consequently, they've got a totally false view of what Islam really is. And going further back up the paragraph to what you were just talking about, with the barring of people like Robert Spencer and Pamela Geller to the UK. They're crowing about that, of course, because they think they see it as a positive thing, because Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer weren't able to, as they said, take part in anti-Muslim rallies or deliver inflammatory lectures. Of course, there's no problem, as far as they are concerned, with people like Mohammed Al-Arifa spouting hate and saying that the severing of limbs and the smashing of skulls of non-believers is a great honour for Muslims and should be undertaken at every conceivable opportunity in honour of Allah and in order to promote Islam at the expense of non-Muslims. They don't say anything about that. I mean, people like that are perfectly okay, and they're perfectly okay with the British authorities. That particular person was allowed in, and I think it might have been the same week that Pamela Geller and Robert Spencer were denied entry to the UK. So, and that's the crazy thing. I mean, we interviewed Robert Spencer not long ago. I think it might have been on the Liberty GB show, Kel, which you were there too, and you would have heard him say that Islam does have a developed doctrine of warfare against non-believers, That is obviously not a problem for the British authorities, because they've allowed in Mohammed Al-Arifa, who very clearly espoused that position, that yes, Islam does have a developed doctrine of warfare against non-believers, but that was one of the reasons that was given to Robert Spencer for not being allowed into the country, because he might have said, in one of his inflammatory lectures that Islam has a developed doctrine of warfare against non-believers. So the British government is quite mad at the moment, in as much as they don't want people like Robert Spencer in, but they're quite happy to allow people like Mohammed Al-Arifa and other similar Muslims who if that isn't inflammatory, I don't know what is, saying that you can smash skulls and sever limbs for the honour of Allah and to promote the cause of Islam. If that's not inflammatory, I don't know what is, Kel. that's my take on chapter 3 there. But education is a huge thing.
Chapter 4 is going to have Vito Esposito in the chat room just hitting the roof. But, hey, Moovin, welcome to the chat. Good to see you, Moovin. I love it when Moving's here. I always know something exciting is going to happen, whether it be on our phone lines there, Tim. What do you think, eh? But
well, you never know.
You never know. But Chapter 4 of this ILC initiative is just going to have, well, not only Vito, but everybody floored, because Chapter 4 of the report, the OIC initiative and activities to counter Islamophobia, focused on OIC's ongoing efforts to promote the so-called Istanbul process, an aggressive effort by Muslim countries to make it an international crime to criticize Islam. The explicit aim of the Istanbul process to enshrine in international law a global ban on all critical scrutiny of Islam and Islamic Sharia law. In recent years, the OIC has been engaged in determined diplomatic offensive to persuade Western democracies to implement the United Nations Human Rights Council Resolution 1618, which calls on all countries to combat intolerance, negative stereotyping, and stigmatization of religion and belief. Now, Resolution 1618, which was adopted at the HRC headquarters, the Human Rights Commission headquarters in Geneva in March of 2011, with the support of the Obama administration, together with the OIC-sponsored Resolution 66-167, which was quietly approved by the 193-member UN General Assembly on December 19th of 2011. If widely reviewed, is making a significant step towards furthering the OIC efforts to advance the international legal concept of defaming Islam. And
yes,
I can see this coming out of Vito's ears right now.
Hardly surprising. In fact, I think we should keep a fire extinguisher in the studio, Kel, for that very very purpose, because I can hardly see my way around the studio at the moment for the amount of steam that's obviously been coming out of various people's ears as they listen to this. But yeah, I mean, they will, if they possibly can, they will push this through. I mean, I would hope that even with the support of the Obama administration, that cooler heads would prevail and that we would not get such a resolution passed, because if we ever do find ourselves in a position where we cannot legally criticize Islam, it will be a sad day for humanity as a whole. And don't forget, when I say as a whole, I'm talking about Muslims as well, because Muslims are the first victims of Islam. They might publicly espouse the fact that Islam is the best thing since sliced bread, but you can bet that a large number of them actually live under a great deal of psychological terror and fear of doing the wrong thing or saying or thinking the wrong thing, and exposing themselves as doubters and potential apostates to their circle of friends. I was reading an article from the Council of Ex-Muslims only today, and they've got this fantastic category in the Council of Ex-Muslims website. I'm going to try and find the link if I can. I'm pretty sure I've saved the link somewhere. But this category is called Shit That Muslims Say to Ex-Muslims. And there's a whole list of things that people have posted there. And what it shows is the if you look at 200 or 300 of these these things that various people have posted on this website, you get a sense of the psychological terror that Muslims are under just trying to live up to the standards that are expected of them as Muslims in front of other Muslims. And they, you know, they go into paroxysms of anxiety if they, you know, use the wrong hand to eat food with, or if they step into the toilet with the wrong foot, or if they say or do something that might lead one of the people in their social circle to doubt their belief as a Muslim, and the terror that these people must be under. You know, if we could get Islam exposed to the light of day and get it so that it was no longer seen as a religion, but purely as a political ideology first and foremost, which is what it is, the collective sigh of relief that would go up from the Muslim world is, well, maybe not straight away, but if they suddenly realized that they didn't have to stay within a ridiculous belief system that has imprisoned them for so long, I reckon you would see a mass conversion away from Islam. Okay, we may be some time away from that. But the converse, of course, is true. If we ever got to the point where we could not speak our mind about Islam, it would be a terrible, terrible thing for humanity, and it would hold back the development of humanity for generations and generations to come. And, you know, why should we allow this? Why should we allow this? It's obviously a completely backward political ideology. And I'm making the distinction here about the political ideology as regards the faith, the actual belief in a deity. I mean, if you want to believe that there is a deity called Allah and he needs to be prayed to five times a day, that's fine. Fill your boots is what I say. You carry on. Just don't, you know, just while you're doing it, and go and do it in a private place where you're not bothering anybody else, and that will be fine, right? But don't bring it into the public sphere. And the other thing about the public sphere is when you compare what I'd like to call the Islamic civilizational model, which is to say the practice of Islam in the public sphere in Islamic countries. You've only got to look around in pretty much every Islamic country where the Islamic civilizational model is prevalent to see the levels of strife, poverty, ignorance, misery. And you compare that to countries where the Judeo-Christian civilizational model holds sway, and there is just no comparison. And that's what I say, that's what I mean when I say the Judeo-Christian civilizational model is far and away a better framework for the development of humanity from this point forward. I'm quite happy for people to disagree with me, but I don't see any framework that has been developed to this present day that can hold a candle to it. And certainly the Islamic civilizational model is never likely to come close. And that's why you look at, let's take a simple measure, right? Nobel Peace Prizes. People who have been brought up in the Judeo-Christian civilizational model have got pretty much a handle on all the Nobel Peace Prizes since the Peace Prize was developed. Muslim countries, what have they got? I think they've got 7 Nobel Peace Prizes, and one of them was to Yasser Arafat, who is a complete out-and-out terrorist. And it just goes to show that Islam is not a good framework if you want to develop just scientific, if you want to look as a framework for scientific achievement, let alone all the other categories that I've talked about on this. That's what I'm saying. That's what we have to lose if the freedom of speech is, the ability to criticize Islam is taken away from us. We've got everything to lose, and that's why we have to fight with everything at our disposal.
And before we move into the fifth and final chapter of this OIC report, I was looking in the chat room, and Vito Esposito brought up a really good point, and this involves Pastor Saeed Abedini. Now, I am so familiar with his case because I used to lend Red Fox blogger or Space to a very fine gentleman named Randy Noble. And Randy Noble has a wonderful show right here on Blog Talk Radio. He has spread his wings. He's expanded. I'm so proud of him. I created a beautiful radio host. And Randy L. Noble of The Cross in the Desert, you can hear him right here on Blog Talk Radio. Now, he speaks a lot about Pastor Syed Abedini. And believe me, this breaks my heart, this story, in that this man is a Christian. He's an apostate. And what he did is that he went to, what he wanted to do was that he simply wanted to build orphanages in the Middle East. And he was arrested in Iran for doing that. Pastor Syed is an American pastor who is serving an 8-year sentence in one of Iran's toughest prisons simply for sharing his Christian faith. And I put a link in the chat room. There is a petition you can sign if you want to go to that and click on that and take a look at it, because this is something else. Before we move into chapter 5, and then Tim, I have another article here I want to pick your brain with, and mm-hmm. that is, what are Western Christians doing to help our Christian brothers and sisters? But before we do that, let's just wrap up the Chapter 5 of this report, and then we can move into that. Now, Chapter 5 of the OIC report provides a set of conclusions and recommendations which call on Western governments, international organizations, and non-state actors to take all necessary measures within their power and legal jurisdictional systems to ensure a safe environment free from Islamophobic harassment by strictly enforcing applicable hate crime and discrimination laws. Create, whenever necessary, specialized bodies and initiatives in order to combat Islamophobia based on internationally recognized human rights principles and standards. Combat Islamophobic hate crimes, which can be fueled by Islamophobic hate speech in the media and on the... Oh, hello, Tim. On the internet. Take all necessary measures to ensure that the media refrains from serving as a platform for the defamation of hate speech by associating extremism and terrorism to Islam and Muslims, and present the true positive nature of Islam. I can't read this with a straight face. I'm sorry, Tim.
Yeah,
I'm fine.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Implement provisions of UNRC Resolution 1618 through the Istanbul Process Mechanism, as it offers a positive platform for debate, exchange of best practices, and maintaining of a common and unified stance. And there you go. Tim and myself, we gave you the bullet points. Tim?
Well, yes.
Right, sorry, right. I got to mute myself. I'm laughing here. I'm laughing way too hard.
Yeah, well, strictly enforcing applicable hate crime and discrimination laws to keep the environment free from Islamophobic harassment, which presumably encompasses calling mendacious grievance mongering taqiya artists by their real description of mendacious grievance mongering taqiya artists, amongst other things, which of course is what's got me into trouble. And I do remember that when I was in the police station at the back end of last year, I was having a nice cup of tea with these police officers. I did feel that I was actually persuading them towards my point of view. I was in the police station for about 2.5 hours talking on tape to these police officers. In fact, I think they got through about 5 tapes, and they had to say about every half hour they'd say, "Can you just stop talking for a minute? We've got to change the tape again." And I'm thinking, "Oh, I've just got into me flow," and they just want me to stop talking. But anyway, we had quite a nice chat. The two police officers who I met on that occasion seemed to me to be perfectly reasonable, but it was obvious to me that the decision to press the charge was taken upstairs to the Crown Prosecution Service. The police themselves, I think, to their own devices, might not have been so keen to press charges. I'm not saying they wouldn't have done on their own, But nevertheless, it was pushed upstairs, and the word came from the Crown Prosecution Service, yes, this sort of thing has to be stamped on. It's becoming a very, very serious problem. This is how it was explained to me as I was being charged. And we take a very serious view of these things. And I'm thinking, all I did was to criticise this guy because of some articles that appeared in the Daily Telegraph newspaper, which is one of the mainstream media daily newspapers over here, and it exposed Fayez Magal as a liar, a fraud, and a cheat. And I mean, I knew of this guy before these articles came out, and I hadn't formed a very good impression of him, I have to say. But when these articles came out, and it was obvious to me that he'd abused his position as the director of a publicly funded organisation in order to manipulate the statistics so that he could get large amounts of money from the taxpayer. Now, that is fraud. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't care how you dress it up. And the fact that he had his funding partially, if not wholly, withdrawn shortly after that exposure shows that I'm not alone in thinking that there was something dodgy about the way that he was doing things. The Association of Chief Police Officers called him out and said, your figures don't add up. The Department of communities and local government said, we're going to stop your money, and apparently he threw a paddy. He had a hissy fit and stormed out of the meeting, when he lost his money, he wasn't at all happy about it. So I mean, I was quite caustic, ladies and gentlemen. To be fair, I was quite sarcastic. When I wrote on my Twitter timeline, I put a little spoof news article saying, breaking news, Fayez Magal agrees not to tell any more porky pies if the British government give him back his £214,000. And that absolutely, apparently, that really upset him. That he quoted that as one of the tweets, that he demanded the police come round and take me to task for posting that tweet. Then there was the one that called him a mendacious grievance mongering Takiya artist, and there were one or two other tweets, ladies and gentlemen, and I do believe that it's alleged that one of the tweets actually referred to him as a lying Muslim scumbag. Now, I suppose in advance, well, I know, in advance of the court case, I suppose I oughtn't to comment. If the worst thing that he was called in the wake of his exposure in the Sunday Telegraph and the corresponding Daily Telegraph a few days later, if the worst thing that he was called was a lying Muslim scumbag in the wake of that exposure, when he was exposed as a liar, a fraud, and a cheat, if that was the worst thing he got called, then I consider he got off very lightly indeed. And for him to come and take me to task, what he should have done is write me a letter and say, thank you, Mr. Cat Strangler. I feel completely chastened now. I realise I was, in fact, a mendacious grievance-mongering Takiya artist, and I am a liar, and I'm guilty of fraudulently cheating the British taxpayer out of hundreds of thousands of pounds. And really, I should say to you, Mr. Cat Strangler, I'm only too grateful to you for pointing this out to me on Twitter, and I promise not to do it again. But he didn't do that, ladies and gentlemen. He went round to his local police station and filed a complaint and had me charged. Now, I personally think that all the people who are involved in this process should have stopped at some point and said, well, hold on, let's see if we can't inject a little common sense into the equation. But common sense seems to be in short supply in the United Kingdom at the moment. And so I have to go to court on Tuesday, the 8th of April, and argue my case. But we'll have to see how that turns out. When they're talking about enforcing applicable hate crime and discrimination laws, you can understand why I am perhaps feeling a little bit bitter and twisted about that. But other than that, what else have we got, Kel? You were mentioning, I know you wanted to wrap this up, and then you had something else you wanted to introduce for us.
I do. We're down to our last 20 minutes per Fayez Magal. This is what Fayez Magal actually sounds like, ladies and gentlemen. Damn, I got a pop-up. Here we are.
Oh, yeah, that's him. I recognize him. Yep.
There you go. No, note to self, do not go directly to YouTube. Download, take to Audacity, edit, put in studio.
Yes. So.
Notorious for their pop-up ads on YouTube. But, yeah, just to wrap this up in a bow is that like what Vito Esposito brought up about Pastor Saeed Abedini, and that is true. What are we in the West doing to help our Christian brothers and sisters in the Middle East? Now, this is an article from The Spectator. This is from December as well. But Western Christians are not helping their persecuted brothers and sisters. And as Christmas Day breaks over Malula, one of the last few villages which still speaks the language of Christ, Islamist fighters will patrol the streets. Whether the nuns of its Asian convent are safe depends on who you believe, President Assad or Al-Qaeda. The local shrine of St. Thisila was built in the cleft of the miraculous rock. There's a grim irony in the knowledge that the nuns of St. Thisila will spend Christmas Day caught between a rock and a very hard place. Now, there are so many out there that are being persecuted, I guess. I quoted Pastor Sayed Abedini. There are many other Christians in the Middle East which are being persecuted. There is Yusuf Nagarkhani. He was actually freed in January of 2013, so we have a victory there. But what about Egypt's Christians? What about Karma Petras? What about Erman Mashi? What about the fact that they're desecrating cemeteries in the Middle East to use as, I don't know, farmland? What about Asher and Robin Parkes, Christian brothers threatened with death for just simply trying to work? These are stories. There are countless stories out there, ladies and gentlemen, and that our Christian and our Judeo brothers and sisters are being persecuted on a daily basis. They're being imprisoned. They're being tortured. Sayed Abedini still languishes in an Iranian prison. Sayed Abedini is very, very ill. He's being denied his medication. He is close to death unless we get him out. And I actually had an opportunity to speak with his wife, Nagma, when Randy was with me on Red Fox Blogger, and to listen to Nagma speak about missing her husband. They have two young children. They have a little boy and they have a little girl, and he's languishing in Iran. And what are we doing about it? Tim?
Well, yes. What are we doing about it? I mean, the fact is that our Christian leaders are doing very, very little. And this is something else that we have talked about with other people on our show, that Christian leaders seem only too keen to follow the example of our political elites and not do anything that offends Muslims. Okay, we know that if Muslims are offended, they are likely to riot and to get violent at the drop of a hat. But that should not be a reason for us to spare them from the truth. If we feel that there are certain things about Islam which need bringing into the light of day, and the mistreatment of Christians is certainly one thing that we should all be speaking very loudly about, because it's no use Muslims coming to us and saying that Islam is a benign and tolerant religion of peace, where in every country where they have the opportunity to do so, they will persecute non-Muslim minorities, whether it's Christians, whether it's Jews, or whether it's any other kind of non-Muslim. if Muslims have the opportunity to mistreat or to persecute or to engage in all-out slaughter or genocide, they will take that chance. There is nothing that Muslims like better than to slaughter non-Muslims when they have the opportunity. And they do in every country where they have the opportunity to do so. You've only got to look at what's happening in the Central African Republic, what's happening in Nigeria. Now, of course, what we're seeing, well, Burma, that's another example. And, of course, what we see when people decide to take up arms and fight back is the Muslims immediately go whining to the world's press and saying, oh, all these nasty Burmese Buddhist monks have attacked the Rohingya Muslims for no reason at all. Or in the Central African Republic, Christians have taken up arms and they're attacking Muslims for no reason at all. Or in Nigeria, Nigeria is slightly different because you've got Boko Haram in there and they are absolutely running wild, killing non-Muslims left, right and centre at the moment. That's typically Muslim on Christian violence. But whenever you get anybody fighting back, of course, then the Muslims are instantly whining to the world press that they're put upon and oppressed and being attacked for absolutely no reason. And our church leaders are doing absolutely nothing to stand up and take a moral stance, which is, I think, is absolutely appalling. Church leaders, especially Christian church leaders, should be right up there amongst the world's leaders condemning what Muslims are doing, but they're afraid to do it because they see it as destroying all the positive interfaith outreach that they've achieved in the last 10 or 15 years, which of course is a total myth, because the only outreach that Muslims are prepared to engage in is outreach that allows Muslims to proselytize to Christians. They do not want to take on board any Christian traditions or values because as far as they're concerned, Christianity or other denominations have nothing to teach Islam at all. So outreach, as far as Muslims are concerned, only goes one way. But Christians, Christian leaders and rabbis, people who ought to be in a position to have done the research and who ought to know better are standing up and saying, well, we can't endanger this interfaith outreach by speaking up against Muslim brutality, Muslim atrocities, Muslim intolerance, all of which
it doesn't even make the mainstream media. But yeah, you're right. When the poor widdle Muslims are so-called persecuted, like you say, in Burma, all of a sudden it's all over the front pages, splashed all over the place. But, you know, a lot of people, they really do have to start going to websites and educating themselves. I mean, for goodness sake, I mean, just go to the Islam, the Religion of Peace, and I put the link in the chat room for everybody. They have the tallies going on. They have the weekly jihad report. What are we up to this week, March 1st to March 7th, jihad attacks? 50 Allah Akbars, Alua Akbars, and those are suicide bombings or whatever. We had 4 this week. Dead bodies, 434. Critically injured, 660. Nobody is talking about these Islamic atrocities, but they want to come to the OIC. They want to form the OIC and go to the United Nations and put these damn proposals in front of us? No, this is just absolute nutsoid. This is schizophrenic. This is insanity. It is mass Islamity. We have to stop the insanity, and that's what we're doing, one show at a time. And, Tim, we are just about out of time, but I do want to remind people that Vito Esposito is in our chat room. He is the proprietor of the Radio Jihad Network, heard right here on Blog Talk Radio. Vito has a show this evening, 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, and 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 10 p.m. in which you folks across the pond are still on Greenwich Mean Time. So try to be at Vito's show tonight, because I know that Vito is a... Sometimes I think I'm a female Vito because I get so damn passionate about this. I get very, very worked up, and that's what we have to do. We have to wake up. We have to get worked up. We have to get angry, and we have to talk about it, and we cannot be afraid to do so. And something else, too, is that Vito pays me to say that? No, I'm just kidding, Tim. But Tim and myself, we have a program on the Radio Jihad Network on Tuesdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 10 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time for the next 3 weeks, in that we are the freedom-loving infidels. And we talk about the issues of Islam, but we also try to invite people in to discuss with us. Tim and myself, we are so very excited that Sonny England from across the pond will be joining us. He is a young man. He is 19 years old. He is going to explain to the listeners in North America what he, as a young man, is experiencing growing up in an increasingly Islamic-ridden UK.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. Sonny is a voice that we've only recently started hearing on EDL, but he's full of passion. So if you can tune in and listen to him when he comes onto our show, I'd urge you to do so, because he's a voice that's certainly worth listening to.
And with that, we're out of time again. Where does the time go, Tim?
Where indeed. I noticed that moving. Put in a couple of comments into the chat room, saying where is Wellington and Montgomery when we need them? Well, quite
yeah.
Right too. And he's also said we should send Sharp after him. Now, I don't know how popular Sharp is over in the States. It's a TV series that we had over here. I absolutely love the series. It's based on some books by a chap called Bernard Cornwell, and it follows the exploits of a British soldier in the Napoleonic Wars. And it's very much, you know, all derring do and swashbuckling and stuff like that. But it's also a great lesson in history as well. And it translates to the screen from the novels very, very well. And Sharp is just the sort of character that you want on your side when you're in a fight. So he's put a link in there to one of Sharp's episodes. So if you've got a little time to watch one of those episodes, the link is on YouTube. But yeah, thanks for that move in. We could definitely do with another Sharp with one of these old British muskets with a really razor sharp bayonet on the end of it, and send him round to Fiaz Mughal's office and give him a bit of a prod, because he certainly needs it. That's definitely true. Not that I'm suggesting anything violent, you know, just a little
you
general,
know what,
I would go
one step forward, and we need a Dexter. And for those not familiar with that Dexter, he is America's most beloved serial killer, in which he only takes out the very, very, very bad guys. And so we need running around.
I have to laugh. We don't want to be seen to be promoting serial killers in resolving this little contretemps with Fiaz Mughal.
Hey, we pay for this show. We can say what we damn
yeah,
well
that's
please.
Right, that's right.
I'm just kidding. But you're right. No, of course not. We're not doing that, people. No,
not at all. But I think, you know, a little prod with a Napoleonic bayonet wouldn't go amiss at all. But I think yeah, when it comes to Dexter, perhaps we'll keep him in reserve just in case we need to call on him again. Yes,
we'll
that'll
do
be
that.
Good.
Okay. Hey, so Tim, I guess I'm going to see you tomorrow night over there at Radio Jihad Network, eh?
Yes, indeed, and I promise to be there on time as well, because I'm going to need
you better,
to be there an hour
it.
Early. Yeah, well, precisely. So, yes, I'll see you, and hopefully, ladies and gentlemen, you'll be able to join us on Freedom Loving Infidels tomorrow evening. If you're across the pond, it'll be the same time as usual. For listeners over there, we'll be opening up the show an hour earlier. Instead of 11 o'clock GMT, it'll be 10 o'clock GMT. So I look forward to seeing you all then.
Absolutely, Tim. Once again, banner show, way to go. And once again, congratulations to Bigfoot for winning the prize. And with that, we are going to say good evening. And we will see you here, though, at Red Fox Blogger next Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And Tim, have a great evening.
Yes, you too, Kel, and I'll speak to you tomorrow.
Absolutely. Good night, everybody. And remember, it is mass Islamity. We have to stop the insanity.
Stop the insanity. That's it. Good night, everybody. See you soon.
hope alive. I know sometimes in life you feel that everything is lost, and that mountain is just too high to climb.
Keep hope alive.
Well, that's when you gotta dig deep down inside and reach that inner strength you never knew you had. To give you the will to carry on another day. Another day goes by and you're outside, still wondering why, watching everything you work so hard, and life all begins to fall apart. It breaks your heart to see it all crumbling at the wayside. You wanna lay your head down, pack it in and say goodbye, cause there's nothing left here to keep hope alive. Until you see the only two things in life that really matter. It's a little girl and a little boy. Want your foolish pride, want your beautiful joy. What's left of a candy bar when it's like the remains of a Chips Ahoy. Playing with a piece of driftwood that create a little mind made into a beautiful toy. And at that moment you realize you gotta rebuild everything Mother Nature had just destroyed. Their precious little heartbeat gave you the strength of a thousand men. Gave you the will to get back up on your feet again. Because you knew right then this battle wasn't about you, it's all about them. And you reassured them like all your daddy can. And they knew right then that everything was gonna be alright. Some harm's way, putting in all those hours, and all my friends working day and night, making it right here, tunnel of towers, bringing us hope like a ray of sunshine, peeking through the clouds, clearing the showers. Well, here's to you, two shots of whiskey, one Jameson, one Johnny Powers. From Coney Island to Seaside Heights, Long Beach, Freeport, the Lower East Side, Massapequa, the Sheepshead Bay.